Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to the Backcountry PA Podcast. This is episode 122.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Episode 122.
Moving along.
122. For all you watchers on YouTube, thank you. I didn't point at the camera. There we go.
It's kind of.
It's kind of over there now.
There it is.
So on this one, we're out in Illinois. Again, Ethan and I are out in Illinois. Andrew didn't join us this time. Maybe in a few years when we go back out there.
For sure.
Join us again. Or join us for the first time, not again. Well, join us again.
Out there in
Illinois. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that hurt.
You know what? That hurt my brain too. And my brain hurts already. So on this one, we recap day three. It was.
Yes.
Ethan went to a new spot, I believe.
Nope.
In this.
I stayed at the same spot for 3 days.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you said game plans were changing in the last episode. Could have swore you did. Maybe you say when
I probably thought
maybe you went to a new stand on the same property. I think that's what it was.
It might have been.
You went to a new stand. I guarantee that's what it is.
Probably
100%. I added
times.
The
times different out stuff there, so I don't know.
Yeah, hour difference.
Yeah,
one whole hour.
One whole hour makes a big difference.
60 minutes and was it 3,600 seconds? If I did my math right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Yeah.
College educated. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Go team.
All right.
All right. So Ethan changes spots. Same property, just different spot. You hear the whole update, what everyone else had. Also in this episode, Tim, who came out with this, Tim Lohman, he tells a story of his Kansas public land buck.
Yes.
So he tells that story. It's a really interesting story. Yeah. We'll post the pictures in the actual episode, so you can actually see the buck that he has. It's a beautiful buck. And then Tim and I, we have a game plan change game plan for, wow, okay, for where we're sitting, because they had a buck on camera that we moved. We're trying to make a game plan on that.
Yep.
But you'll hear the whole thing in the episode. And then, of course, you're going to hear Patrick's news articles, which I don't know what they are yet because we're recording this on Tuesday and he sent them to me on Wednesday. So I can't tell you what the news articles are right now. You're going to have to wait and find out just like I do.
It's a secret.
But quickly updating how our seasons are going so far because it's late season right now. Yes. I've been out. I've had my most productive sits recently. I think it was Saturday. Me and my dad went out. We were going to take the flintlocks out, but it was raining.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, let's just take the archery equipment out. He took his crossbow. I took my bow, took the saddle out. And I go down to a field. I found where they come out. And I'm like, okay, well, they're probably going to come out right there. So I set up on the other corner. And I have two sticks up. About to put my third up. And a doe comes out right where I thought they were going to come out at. So my bow's on the ground. I'm in the tree, tethered. But I don't have my bow.
Of course.
And she walks 15 yards in front of me and slowly walks. And then I actually see a buck chase, which I text you guys.
Yep.
I get one stick up and I see over everything. And I just see this like gray thing running, like head down, tail tucked, just running head down. I'm like, oh my God, that's a buck.
Yep.
So it was a very exciting 5 minutes that I got to that spot. And then I sat there and then one blew behind me, saw the tail run. And at 4:30, it was starting to get really foggy, so my rangefinder could only pick up like 8 yards in front of me. So I was like, well, shit. Okay, I guess I'm set my my sight to 25 and hoping that I range correctly with it. So got down from there, took the saddle down, went for a little walk, jumped three more deer, two doe, and then one, I don't know what it was, stayed in the thick stuff, so I might have been a smaller buck. I don't know. Or could have been the mom of the two doe that ran in front of me. And then I'm walking up, and I jumped three more deer. And I'm like, man, that's eight deer I saw in a matter of 4 hours being out here. So, I mean, that was a productive day. Went back out yesterday because I had off, and I saw four deer while I was set up my saddle. So
it's like you got to get to your spot five minutes sooner.
Yeah. Right, or be 5 minutes late so they walk in front of me. Like one way or another, you know, that's...
You need five extra minutes.
Yeah. But that's how my late season's going so far. Andrew got a buck down, but we're going to have to do another episode just for that.
Yeah, that wasn't late season.
No, that wasn't late season.
That was in season.
Well, it could be considered late season. Rifle could be considered late
last
season.
Last day of rifle, but not your typical late season.
Right.
Right.
You know, last minute, last day, late season. Same church, different pew.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Ethan has been out.
No. The Outdoor Drive podcast, they do a month-long squirrel hunt competition throughout the month of January. I haven't been out yet, but I plan on getting out this week so to go shoot some squirrels and participate in that. That's usually how my late seasons go is I'm out small game hunting.
Do what you love, man. Do what you love. And love what you do.
Yeah. Can't complain about that. I mean, I got a doe and rifle season, so I'm not too stressed about going and getting another deer.
Yeah. So we didn't really... No, we won't do it. I was going to say we should have a debate topic right now. Maybe we could do the term that we didn't... that we think shouldn't be, or the one we... what is it? What did I say it was? The phrase that...
Yes.
Makes it better or worse?
You're asking what yours was?
No. What the topic should be. Like the phrase. Which phrase in the hunting industry do we think that makes it better or worse? That is the question. So mine would be, I think the big buck down is a controversial topic because like I posted yours. And someone goes, where's the big buck?
The bot.
Yeah,
I wasn't a real person.
You think so?
Hell no.
There's no way. It looked like the count was created 2 minutes before they posted the comment.
Hey, his maybe profile it was. Picture was a sunset.
A big sky guy. Big
his
sky
or guy. Hers. Or theirs.
Big.
I don't know.
Cactus. But I think it causes a I think it causes
get
a
it?
Lot of
prick? Cactus prick?
I didn't even think about that. That's good.
That's where I thought you went.
No.
Sorry.
I wish I could have taken that credit. No, but I mean, I think the big buck down thing is very controversial. You know, I think I get why people say it, but yet also I think there's, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on people to get that big buck. And like, if they post something, you have to be worried about what people are going to say. What we shouldn't have to worry about it. Like we're hunting. Like the biggest part of hunting is conservation.
For sure.
Like that's what we're doing. Like we're controlling the population of these deer so they don't have to suffer and starve to death in winter like we had last week, 2 weeks ago now, with that really cold front that came through. I wouldn't even call it a cold front. It was an Arctic cold front.
Yeah, -14. Yeah.
Like so they don't have to starve through that. Like if there weren't hunters there controlling the population, who knows how many deer would have died of starvation from that. You know, yes, it's only 3 days, but yet if you have multiple days of that, multiple weeks of that in the cold, and the food's pretty much gone, there's going to be some that starve or don't make it because they don't have the food source to keep their bodies warm or keep their, you know, energy up. I don't know. I just... People are forgetting that the biggest reason we hunt is to control the population of deer and control. That's the biggest thing we control.
Yeah. From a residential hunter perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But I mean, that deer I shot had a shit ton of corn in it, and there is not a cornfield for miles.
Yeah.
So he's got a friendly neighbor somewhere around.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure they're definitely benefiting.
Oh yeah. There's definitely friendly people that feed these deer that corn and all that kind of stuff and minerals and stuff like that. Like, it's out there, but like, those are also people that are saying, oh, you shouldn't hunt them because they're such beautiful creatures.
Tasty, beautiful creatures.
Exactly.
I agree they are phenomenal
on my wall.
Yeah, I agree that they are beautiful creatures, but on the other hand, they need to be controlled.
Yep.
Or else managed. These deers are out of control. Catch them all.
Catch any deers?
Anyway, Andrew, what is a phrase that you think shouldn't be in the outdoor industry? Because you guys said about fishing.
Yeah, so I want to touch on this when we have Zion on in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. We can.
And we'll debate this, but snagging and flossing.
Mm. Like the whole...
Not the dance?
No, not the dance. It's legal in some states.
Flossing.
Not so much. Same term as snagging, just aiming for the mouth.
Okay, gotcha.
Not so legal in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, Zion and I will definitely talk about that in the weeks to come.
Yeah. Yeah, that's this Saturday.
We'll save that one.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about the snagging.
Okay.
My dad told me about it. Because my dad, you went up to Pulaski, right? No, it wasn't you recently. No, you went somewhere.
Eerie.
Close.
Kind of.
Same pond.
Same pond.
Different area.
Yeah, different side of the pond, I guess. I don't know. Different state. No, but my dad said that they actually have snagging sections when you go for salmon fishing.
Hmm.
You can only, like, if you want to snag fish, because the salmon are so jam packed in there.
Yeah.
They have a section where, like, oh, you can snag here, but you can't snag over here. I was like, oh, so that alone is a whole. We'll touch on that.
That's good. Make sure you write that down. I don't want to forget that.
I won't forget it. Okay. It will come up regardless. Okay. For sure.
Right. Ethan, phrase.
Now I want to save. I kind of want to. Okay. Well, the fishing one, I think I want to save for when Zion's here, because that's a longer discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just for hunting, I think a positive one. I'm going to go positive here.
Good. We need some positivity in our life.
We actually started. I don't know if we started this, but we
did
this. Don't shame the game.
Boom.
Don't shame the game. And I think ever since, that's all we spread. Don't shame the game. Doesn't matter if you shoot your 50-inch 6-point that I have, which I have to bring that in so you guys can actually see it, that my tiny little
I told
buck.
You were going to put it right behind you.
Exactly. I have to. Or you shoot a 160-inch buck or a 150-pound doe or a 100-pound doe. Like, there's, you harvested an animal. Mm-hmm. You did something that not everyone can do. You did something that not everyone gets a chance to do. So we don't shame the game. And I think since us spreading that positivity kind of sticks to other people and they want to keep that, because no one wants to get, you know, like, oh, you didn't shoot a big buck. No one wants to hear that.
Yeah.
You know.
But people still do that.
People. Well, but we don't
associate with those people. But we shame those people.
We shame those people.
Right. Okay. So that was a little debate topic for everyone, since we didn't have debate topics out in Illinois.
Nope.
For the episode, so you didn't have those to enjoy. So you're welcome for that. Partners. We have a new partner.
Yes.
Our Grounds Coffee Company. Go check them out on Instagram. I'm drinking it right now. I have a little, you know, pecan in there with it to drink while I podcast. But use code BCPA. That'll get you a discount off. He didn't let me know how much the discount is yet, but I will get you a discount off of some kind.
It is phenomenal coffee. He was on recently, and Ed knows his coffee for sure.
You even said it like him, too. Coffee.
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 I mean, I
guess. Is that the way to say it?
I go to school in Philly now, basically. They all say coffee.
I just, my wife makes fun of me with how I say coffee, because apparently I say it weird.
Caffy.
Coffee.
Coffee.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have Heated Hunts. Use code BCPA5. Get you 5% off your entire order. Forget Genetics. Use code Backcountry, BACKCTRYPA. That gets you 20% off your entire order. Deer Age or Wildlife Labs on the IG. Use code Backcountry PA, all capitals. That'll get you 10% off your first order. Ethan, you just ordered yours. Did you get yours in the mail yet?
Yes. I'm aging the doe that I shot because it was up at the cabin. I want to age every deer I get from up north around the cabin just out of curiosity. So my teeth are in the mail. And now, obviously, wait, I didn't get the fast.
Did you get 90 days?
Yes. I don't remember. I got the slower one.
I think you got 90. I think 90 is the slowest one they have.
I might have got the 90.
It's like 1 week.
One. Yeah.
1 week.
30 and 90.
It was a week, a month, and 3 months.
Yeah, if I'm
not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I think I got the really three. Fast. I got the 3 month one just because I'm in no rush really to know how old the doe was. I'm just curious. So I got that. It's in the mail, and now I wait. I'll probably forget about it.
Yeah.
3 months from now.
Oh, what's this?
Oh, look at this. What's this from?
So, Silent Partners, I guess you could say, OnX. We use that every day. My OnX
for
is
sure.
Like, I don't know how many pins I have on OnX right now.
You have no green on there. It's
There's
all different
no green.
Pin colors. It's no, you can't see the trees.
The public that's near me, I have no green. There's no green. Like, you got to zoom in to find green.
Yes.
Habit Outdoors with Ethan's rocking some Havoc gear right now. That's. Yes. So I have one not the same, but pretty close.
It's so comfy.
It's very comfortable. Cabela's. Just kidding.
Heated Hunts.
Yep. Already said them.
Oh, sorry. I had it next to me. It is here.
It's here.
But I don't think there's anyone else that I'm missing. No. I think that's it. If it is, it's because we don't really talk to you that much. So maybe reach out to us if you're partnering with us. We don't know.
Let's be friends.
Yeah, let's be friends.
We want friends.
Yeah. But anyway, guys, I hope you enjoy this episode. Remember to give us a like, a follow. Also, follow us on YouTube because that's where all of our YouTube videos will be. Carbon TV will be going podcast videos on there as well. Instagram, Facebook. If you listen on Apple or Spotify, give us a rating and review. It helps us keep growing, and it helps us reach more listeners. Also, remember to keep hunting, keep fishing, keep fishing, and always enjoy the freaking process. See ya.
There was a group of friends from Pennsylvania that loved nature. They wanted to become better woodsmen.
I was laying on the couch with my wife, zooming in and out of OnX.
Anglers.
If you have a nice-sized trout, they can give a fight, at least according to the book.
And outdoorsmen.
Basically the grocery store. Fresh groceries.
Stories turn into legends, and legends turn into traditions.
Very German.
This is the Backcountry PA Podcast.
All right, we're back. Day three, recapping. So, Ethan, you want to start with your recap first?
Whatever I said about day two is day three. Like, cold,
very,
windy,
very,
and
exciting,
squirrels.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, we got a new game plan going on.
Yeah.
For tomorrow morning. So.
Okay.
Looking forward to that.
What is it?
New spot. Completely new spot. Actually, Steve, he's actually out, I think right now, fixing it up. He had to get a new bolt or something there for the stand. So,
yeah.
Go to a new area, just the spot I've been at for the last 3 days, just nothing, just squirrels left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Dad's literally on the other side of the hill seeing all of the deer. So it's like, nope, not going to happen.
All right, so Jeff, how was your day today?
Today was a lot of fun.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was, I was sleeping in the morning.
Okay.
To start with. And then...
usually wake up at some point.
Yeah, well, I was comfortable, so I just took a nap before I actually started on it.
Yeah.
But I saw quite a few deer today.
Mm-hmm.
They were peeking in the blind where I was at. Didn't see the buck I was looking for, but for the most part, it was a good day.
Okay. All right. Tim, how about you?
Slow day. Nothing the past 2 days, but day four, high hopes of a big one.
Yep. Yep. It was a breezy one, huh?
I'm tired of the wind.
Patrick, you want to update with your day?
Sure. Yeah, so day three for me, new spot. Went with Steve instead of Mason today. Over by where Ethan and Jeff are on like a strip of timber in between two fields. Got in there around 6, and then probably around 7 o'clock. I was sitting in the stand, just scanning my area, and I looked to my right, I looked in front of me, I looked to my left, and then I heard like a splish over to my right, in the little stream that runs through the timber there. And I looked over and my eyes adjusted, and the gray blob that I saw turned into a doe that was just drinking from the stream and looking at me. Give me the side eye.
Oh, what is it? I'm drawing a blank too. The vanishing.
Oh, the Phantom of the Hunt?
Phantom of the Hunt.
I'm sorry. Well, you just said that one came out of left field. I'm so sorry. It said, I was in the story, man. I'm sorry. You just pulled me from. But the Phantom of the Hunt, I thought maybe it was the Phantom of the Hunt, right? Maybe it was the Phantom of the Hunt. It's just playing tricks on me. No. It was just staring at me while taking a drink. And I don't know what was going on. I mean, it must have really liked me because it did not stop looking at me. And it made pretty much a full half circle in front of me. It stayed about like 12 yards in front of me and just kept staring at me. Since I am using a compound bow, I couldn't just shoot it. I had to pull back, and I was like waiting to choose my moment. And so when it got in front of me, it stopped. It kept staring at me, and then it did this thing, almost like if you've ever seen like a mouse, like you know how they like stand up and they're like they're going like this, and they stick their noses way up in the air, or a squirrel, like any rodent, like those. Like I've never seen a deer do what it was doing, and it was like it was sniffing me. I mean, it was close enough that I could have reached out and give it a little pet on the nose. Then it turned, and I thought that was my opportunity to pull back and get ready to take the shot. And it must have seen the movement because it jumped about 3 feet in the air, and then about another 3 yards over to the left and into the brush. And I followed it with my bow, with my sight, and just like trying to see if I could get a shot. But I'm all about making sure that I take a shot that's going to be lethal, which is probably a large part of why I haven't killed anything so far yet. But just trying to play it smart. So I let it go. And that was the most exciting thing that's happened to me so far. So thinking about what I learned from the situation, I did get down from the stand later on, like midday when nothing was really going on, and I took a look. And really, looking back, I probably should have taken the opportunity to try and take the shot when it was getting its drink, because I was skylined in every other spot. And there was a tree kind of backdropping me. If I would have taken the shot at that time, tried to take the shot, not to say that the same thing wouldn't have happened, but I probably would have had a better chance then. But I'm going back there tomorrow, so I now know that if it's the same situation, that's what I'm going to have to try. So that was day three for me. At the end of the night, I did see 6 deer up on the edge of the field coming down the hill. And man, they really got me. They were coming down right towards the place that the other doe in the morning left out of. And they were like trotting down, and I was getting all excited. I'm like, I'm going to draw my bow now. Like, I'm going to get ready. Like, they're going to come in here, and the first one that comes by me, like, I'm just going to just going to pop them. And they got all the way up to the edge of the tree line, and then they went, nah, yeah, let's go this way. And they just went right back up the hill, and that was right before dark, so that's how my day ended.
Well, so that's pretty impressive. Not a lot of other hunters would do what you did when getting out of the stand and actually seeing where that deer went. Because they'd be thinking, ah, she smelled me, or she just saw my movements, and they would have just cut it up as a loss. And what you actually went down, like, okay, she was standing here. What does she see when she looks up? And you realized, oh, she saw me clear as day in 95% of where she was standing. Here's the best shot to take place, and you're going back tomorrow. So you know if that happens again, you won't make the same mistake of, like, waiting and trying to get it, be like, oh, I can take this shot here. I don't think most hunters wouldn't even think of doing that. They just, oh, well, that didn't work, and just take it as a loss.
I'm all about learning. All about learning.
I think the mic picked it up. Yeah. So my day in the morning, didn't see anything. Then we went out to lunch with Mason. Got some chicken tenders and fries. Sent a picture to Patrick. He thought it was a buck, I guess, at first.
The picture didn't come in. it said, Cody sent you an image, and the service at my spot is so terrible.
Yep.
That it just said, Cody sent you an image. And I was like, oh, he got
a deer.
Yeah.
Deer. And then it finally loaded, and I was like, well, I'm still jealous.
So then we moved spots in the evening, went and sat on some beans. Back corner where there was a buck that showed up, I guess the day before at 4:20. And so went back there, got set up in probably a tree that's the size of my thigh in my saddle, which if the wind blew 30 miles per hour, it would have maybe, you know, knocked me out of the tree. I think the tree would have fell over completely. But got set up in there, felt good with it. Around 3:30, a button buck came walking out to my left, taking his good old time coming out. I had to stay completely still, even though I was cold, which is a very hard thing to do, to not move around at all. And he went out in the field. He stayed out there for about probably 15 minutes, watched him the whole time. And there was 8 turkeys out in the field too. He went back in, and these around like 4:30, these squirrels are going absolutely nuts. So I turned around for some reason, and all I saw was like white of a hoof and a leg walking through like fallen trees. And I was like, that's a pretty dark deer. So I turned around, had the seatbelt method going over my shoulder. And I was glassing back there, waiting for this deer to come out so I could actually see what it is. And it eventually came out in the clearing where I could see it. And I was like, holy fuck, that's a big buck. Like, the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life. And I was just glassing the whole time. And I watched him the whole way till I lost him when he got up to the top of the hill. And in my mind, I was like, you want some beans, buddy. I know you want some beans. And he never wanted beans. I don't know. I guess he just wasn't into the bean life. But so he went up to the top, lost him in the thicket up there, or he might have bedded down. I don't really know, but I lost him altogether. And then around 5 o'clock, a little doe comes walking out and beds down right to my left. And just beds down right there. So when I get down, she jumps and runs off. But it was an eventful day, second half of the day. I guess we have a game plan for tomorrow. So Mason, do you want to tell us what the game plan is for tomorrow for Tim and myself?
Hold on, the cord was stuck. So in the morning, we're going to head up on the mountain a little bit more. Tim, he's going on the complete backside of the property.
Okay.
There's a couple feeder strips with a food plot in it, catching deer coming back up on that holler to bed. And where you are going, Cody, is basically right on top of that big hollow there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big clover plot. There's a big pass through in between the stretch of timber there. These deer have been somewhat going. And then evening, you're going back to the same spot on the beans, and where you saw that buck go to tonight up on top of that ridge, that's where Tim's going to be tomorrow night.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully Tim can get him down, honestly. Our plan is, you know, Tim hits him, comes running down, then I hit him again, and then we both hold each side of the rack. And then it's like a kind of like a stepdaughter, stepson type thing where he goes back and forth between family members.
So you get him on the weekends.
We have to, yeah. Every 2 weeks we have to go back and forth between houses. Oh, you get him this weekend. Okay, cool.
As long as you're paying for the delivery.
Yeah. I think that'll work, though. I think so, yeah. Meet halfway.
You pay for the mouth?
Well, we split it.
You got a prenup or something?
This is what partnership is
all about. Yeah. Yeah, we split it halfsies.
Why don't you just cut the skull in half then?
And
then
why would he gets I want one half a skull hanging
let
on my
wall? Let the taxidermist do the work and get it mounted, and then just take a chainsaw right down through the middle of it.
Yeah.
It's easier to cut through foam than it is through bone.
That
so.
Is true.
We're overthinking this.
Half
they can make replica. A duplicate.
Yeah, replica.
Yeah.
Well, who we gets the real one then?
Yeah, who does?
We each get one argument. Half of the real one. That's a problem solved right there.
No, what you do is you get two replicas made, and then the original stays here.
That sounds good to me.
Yep.
He's a good one.
I mean, I'm okay with that, as long as he goes down. That's really all I care about.
You just want the story.
That's right. And the at least... replica hanging on my wall. It's like a Bass Pro Shop, really. So that was a recap of day three. Now, Tim, I talked to you yesterday about your Kansas buck. I want to hear the story about the Kansas buck.
Hello and welcome back to Backcountry PA News. My name's Mr. America. Without further ado, let's get into it. The first one today comes from Realtree.com. 25 Hillbilly Squirrel Hunting Tips. This is by Will Brantley with the story and the photos for this one. I think that it's a really great little article with some tips and some good points about how squirrel hunting is really accessible here in the U.S. and we have plenty of squirrels around, one of the most abundant game animals in the country, but often overlooked. And it made me think about how I consider a squirrel hunting, and who knows, maybe I'll be getting out doing some small game, some squirrel hunting this upcoming year. The article talks about several different tips, 25 of them in fact, including becoming an amateur arborist, hunting with your ears, and even what to bring, like binoculars, or what type of shell and choke on your shotgun to use, or maybe use a 22. There's lots of different recommendations. I highly recommend you go check it out, realtree.com. This next one is a bit more sad. It's some unfortunate news that's come to us this week is that Penn Live's Marcus Schneck, PA's preeminent outdoor journalist, dies at 66. I remember reading a lot of different articles from Marcus from Mr. Schneck, and he just always showed dedication to journalism and to telling a story, not just telling a story, but telling stories about life outdoors and how important it is that we keep our traditions and make sure not only in keeping our traditions that we treat nature with respect the way that it's deserved, and that in turn will allow us to hand it down to our sons and our grandsons and everyone else, granddaughters. Marcus Schneck was also very much a Pennsylvania man at heart and just really brought a lot to Pennsylvania journalism, conservation journalism, and we really appreciate you and we're proud to call you a man of PA. The last one that we're going to cover today is from Marcus Schneck. It's about
Bird feeders, backyard feeders, welcome, but not essential for winter bird migration. This is on penlive.com. This was published back at the end of November, this past November. And we're just going to talk about it a little bit in remembrance of Mr. Schneck. And, you know, maybe if you're looking to have more diverse wildlife in your backyard over the winter time, you could still do these couple of things to make sure that happens. The article discusses the myth that feeders, or man-made feeders for birds, can prevent timely migration for migrating birds. And this isn't really factual. So they get about 25% of food from feeders, and the rest is naturally sourced. So full feeders shouldn't keep birds from migrating. Instead, several triggers urge birds to migrate, like changes in nesting locations as trees lose leaves, less natural food sources, insect decline, winds, temperature drop, and day length. Basically, there's so many factors that impact when a bird decides that they're going to migrate that setting out food for these birds is going to keep them in one location. However, they have noted that it's important to put out bird feed because of the impact that it can have on the health of birds as they travel. During winter weather, birds can use up to 75% of their fat storage per night, and studies show birds with regular access to feeders are healthier and have better feather growth, stronger disease resistance, and more successful reproduction. Elaine Cole, the owner of Cole's, says, "For cold weather, I suggest black oil sunflower, white proso millet, cracked corn, Niger seed, raw peanuts, and suet cakes or kibbles to ensure the nutritional benefits of feeders." So thanks again, Marcus Schneck. We really appreciate everything that you've done for us, especially during your time at penlive.com. And thank you, everyone, for listening this far to Backcountry PA News. It's been a roller coaster of a year in 2022. We are now in 2023, and it's going to be a brand new season for all of us. I wish you all the best. Remember to stay safe and keep your tradition.
So November 4th, 5th, get out there. I hang my stand in this little fence row, and I didn't have high expectations, but there was sign there. So that night I hunted, and probably 600-800 yards off in private, I see the deer that I shot and probably like a 180, 190 start fighting. The deer, they're fighting, I'm watching them. The one that I shot busts its whole beam off. I'm like, holy shit. And then, so they run off, and then I'm watching my cameras for 5 days and nothing. I get into this spot the sixth day, and that morning, like a 150 comes out, and there's a guy that I didn't know was in there, like 80 yards off from me. And this deer comes out, and this guy blows on the grunt call. It sounds like a duck call at this point, at this buck. And it, like, looks at him, looks at where the does were, and the buck just takes off, like runs away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, fuck, like what the hell? And then I text my buddies. I was like, I don't think this is meant to happen out here. So time goes by, and then the buck that I shot just comes barreling across the field. And this guy is blowing on the grunt call again, and I'm like, don't fuck this up. And then the deer comes into me. Well, he starts grunting soft. The deer turns, goes to him. So I grunt at him, he comes towards me a little bit, he starts grunting, it goes to him, and I'm like, what kind of like shootout is this right now? And he's only grunting at it, so I pulled out the bleed can, started like just dumping that thing. Like that doe wanted it right there.
Yeah.
So he finally comes, and he gets into like 14 yards, and I hit him quartering two, and I'm like, as soon as I hit him, I saw the his hair turn a little bit. I'm like, shit, did I just mess this up? And the deer tail instantly up and it starts leaping.
for like 80, 90 yards. And I'm like, fuck. Like, I might not find this one. So I give it about 3 hours, and it's all history.
Wow.
But, I mean, it was a battle in the jungle for that deer.
How many days were you out there?
11.
11 days?
11 days, yeah.
And you got him.
Public land.
How'd you, so this spot that you found that you harvested, Matt, how'd you find this spot?
Onyx.
Onyx? Just e-scout the whole time?
Yeah. Luckily, it got out there before, we were there a little bit before the rut hit.
Okay.
So everybody else was moving in towards the end of the trip.
Yeah.
And I killed him on the last morning.
Okay.
Trip, yeah.
Wow. So was this your first time ever in Kansas?
No, second.
Okay.
Well, third time. Last year, I ate the tag, so it would have been the third trip out to Kansas.
And you told me that the Kansas buck, like, they're not very smart.
No, I think they're dumb. They don't look up. And why I took the shot I did was, if you can go silent on them, they're pretty dumb. But my rest squeaked.
Yeah.
Dragging across the felt. And he looked up right at me, and I said, well, it's now or never. So I got lucky there, but everything happens for a reason.
And you were using your hang-on stand that you used, you're using up here, right?
Yeah.
Thing is heavy.
I know.
How far back in were you?
Oh, probably 400 or 500 yards off the road.
Oh, okay. All right.
But just hunting trees and CRP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you scouted for, was just that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you find sign and go for it.
Yeah.
Go for the best. Find one cruising.
Yeah. Especially during the rut in Kansas.
Yeah.
That's what you had to find.
But, like, leading up to that, I saw, you know, good deer the first sit.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see. I bumped a decent 7-point scouting, but other than that, I didn't see a deer. But
okay.
Tough. They're definitely on private.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
So did you go to find that private, the owner of the private land, say, hey, can I have the other part of this guy's antlers? Or
they won't let you on it.
No.
No.
I would have wanted to try to find that broken piece. Be like, hey, I just want this piece of antler. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, though. Just first night out there. Like, I wasn't expecting much the first night. It was like 55, 60 degrees. But, I mean, they were going a little bit, but people are tough out there. They will not let you on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much everywhere now.
Yeah.
The people just don't want to allow hunters on their property.
Private's private and public's public.
Yep.
That's like, I imagine that guy was pretty upset, but
what was up with the main beam?
Snapped off.
He wouldn't let you go get it?
No.
Wow.
So is your mount going to be how you shot it, or are you getting it fixed up?
I haven't decided yet. I'm leaning to just leave it the way I shot it, because that's the way. I mean, that's what the pictures are.
Yeah.
I have no visualization of an actual beam.
I would say, so you saw it get broken off?
This was out there.
Yeah.
10 power binos.
Yeah.
I would say it's the same deer running in that area.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that area, like, I was showing you guys pictures of that one that got, like, sparred, died. I had pictures of that deer a couple days before I shot the one I did. So, deer seem to be cruising that area, but you're talking a couple thousand acres.
Right.
But
yeah, so you just pretty much, you imagine happened
when it busted off, that deer ran into the timber and never came back out.
Yeah.
And then 6 days later, you know, deer that's same frame and everything showed back up.
Yeah.
Out of the same piece of private, ran right into the public.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Did you look into any outfitters out there before you went out?
A little bit. But our buddy of mine, he went out there, hunted a piece of private, just like a lease type thing. Had success. There's a lot of public. Not a lot, but public around it.
Mm-hmm.
Quality deer is out there. So we tried it 2021, and it was like we shot 156 and a mid 120 off of public land. This year, like a 143 and a 122 with a broken beam.
Yeah. I mean, those are still a nice buck.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they're there. I mean, people shoot them all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And is there a good amount of public in Kansas? I never even looked into it, so to be honest.
Hit and miss.
Hit and miss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, northeast Kansas.
Yeah.
So.
To look at?
Southeast seems to be the ticket.
Okay. How about you, Scott? You ever looking at Kansas? I mean, before Illinois, what other states were you looking at?
Originally, I just wanted to do waterfowl.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we were looking at, you know, Eastern Shore of Maryland. I had a lot of connections down there. Knew a lot of people there. Went to school there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to the beach all the time. Loved the area. The thing about that area is if you want to guide waterfowl, you have to have a captain's license through the Coast Guard.
Okay.
So that changes the whole game right there. If you're going to run the Chesapeake or you're going to run down Deal Island, Tangier, the Pocomoke River, any of that backwater or the big water, you got to have a captain's license.
Okay.
Legally here in Illinois, we have the Mississippi, which is navigational waterway. You need a captain's license to guide waterfowl on that too. But what you can do is, let's say all you guys here are duck hunting with us. Let's say we had a duck hole out on an island out on the Mississippi River. Well, we got to get across that river. So I have a duck boat, and I would have you guys fill out a waiver. And basically what I'm going to do is we're going to have, let's say your duck hunt's 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, it's going to take us maybe 30 minutes each trip to get across the river and back.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have a waiver that says, hey, guys, you know, we have to have a crash course on how to run the Mississippi River. So that's how you get around it.
Okay.
You know, so you guys, I'm like, I'm showing you how to get across the river. Well, by the time your hunt's over, you never have to cross it yourself.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of guys down here do. But in Maryland, you know, that's a huge deal on the Chesapeake. Looked at like Waddington, New York, up on the St. Lawrence. Same way up there, had to have a captain's license. Looked at Arkansas down in Jonesboro and right outside Stuttgart. Thing about that is, it's just, you know, the birds aren't there like they used to be. Oklahoma, Kansas, if you want to kill birds, that's the place to go right now.
Yeah.
Out in the panhandle. But, you know, coming out here to Illinois, I never thought there was a lot of duck hunters in Illinois. You never hear anything about it. There's a ton of duck hunters.
Yeah.
And everybody does it. And, you know, Midwest whitetails, like, I mean, they're the biggest in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after the first 2 years, I'm like, all right, everybody wants a deer hunt. Nobody wants a duck hunt. So, looks like we're just doing whitetails, and that's what we've been doing. So, you know, it's been good.
That was my one thing I was thinking of. Like, when you first came down here and started this, your first ever harvest, like, first person that came to
you. You don't want to hear that story.
No, I do. I want to hear that story.
You don't want to hear that story.
I do. I think everyone here wants to hear that
story.
You
don't want to hear that. So actually the first non-client, first harvest out of here was my little brother. At the time, he wasn't real big into deer hunting. You know, me and my dad, we were always big into it. Brother got a crossbow. You know, he's like 14 years old, shoots a doe. He didn't want to shoot a doe. And doe came in and I'm like, Corey, you want to shoot it? He goes, all right, and he shoots it, and 14 years old, he looks at me in a blind, he goes, let's fucking go. So then he was hooked.
Yeah.
And it was a good little trip my dad and my brother had down here, and my grandfather. But the first client to kill one out of here. So I had a buddy from high school and his dad book a hunt with me, and this father and son from Arkansas. So the son, he wasn't even a kid. He's like 23 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my buddy and his dad were here a day early. They're already out in stands. I put this kid out in a stand and his dad, and I texted him like 4 o'clock. I said, hey, man, you seen anything yet? He said, no. I said, well, prime time's coming up.
Yeah.
He goes, all right. And I had seen a good buck in this area. It was the back corner of this cornfield. It was kind of secluded. Coming off CRP, a little finger of timber. So He calls me. He's like, "Hey, buddy, I just shot a biggin." I'm pumped, right? Yeah. I'm pumped. So I get my buddy from high school and his dad. I get this kid's dad, and we get out there. So we drive the truck the whole way back to this cove. And I said, "All right, Kinsley." I said, "How did it happen?" He said, "Well, buddy, he was right there." Now it's pitch black. So I'm like, "Okay, I got my headlamp on." I said, "You tell me where you shot this guy. I got to find first blood. I got to find everything." So I'm walking. He said it was like 30 yards. I'm walking and I'm walking and I'm walking and I'm walking. And my buddy from high school is looking at me. We've killed a lot of deer together. And he's looking at me. We're way past 30 yards at this point. We're like 80 yards away from this stand. Yeah. When we find, he was using a crossbow. We find the bolt and we find blood. And I'm like, "All right. Okay, we'll go from here." So the buck crosses the deer. Let me put it this way. The deer crosses the property line. Call the neighbor. He says, "You go look for it." So good blood. Go across the fence. Hit the CRP. All of a sudden, the blood stops. And we shine our lights to the right side. And there's a doe bedded down like 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
She ain't moving.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't shoot a doe. He shot a buck. He shot a big one, right? So we keep going straight. We can't find blood. So next thing you know, we go back to last blood. And we look again, and that doe's still laying there. And we walk up closer, and her guts are hanging out. And I look at this kid. I said, "Dude," I said, "I thought you shot a big." And he goes, "Well, buddy, there was like 30 deer in the field, and I shot, and they ran." So I'm like, "Oh, my gosh." Like, all right. Oh, so at this point, she gets up, and she starts running.
Yeah. With her guts hanging out.
With her guts hanging out. She ain't running fast. And me and my buddy from high school, we look at each other like we're just going to slit her throat.
Yeah.
So you had to be there, but I'm running. He's running. I jump on her. I toss the knife in midair. He catches it. We slit her throat. He looks at me. He's like, "That's the sharpest your knife's ever been," which was a true statement. And these guys from Arkansas, their eyes were freaking huge. Like, they didn't know what the fuck just happened. So I looked at the kid. I said, "Hey, man, you have to kill a buck now. You cannot shoot a doe." So long story short, his dad the next day killed a really nice buck. We were hunting over this scrape on an old property we used to have that sold. And I put the kid in there that evening. He shoots a buck. They had a good trip. So,
wow. But
yeah, that was the first deer ever killed out of here. It was a kind of a little John Wayne action going on. But
then you doubled up on buck, too. So, like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they both killed does, and they both killed bucks. So, they couldn't ask for a better trip.
So, what was that feeling like? Like, that first client you got here that
I thought, if this is the way it's going to be, it's going to be a long life. That's what I really thought. No, it was a good feeling.
Yeah.
The better feeling was when that year we killed that 168 that was Paul made.
Okay.
And that was actually the same farm. It was a big bull. And I put four guys on this bull. It was during the rut.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got back to the lodge. I got him back out in the afternoon about 1 o'clock. It's probably like 1:35. I'm laying here on the couch. I didn't have any other guides. It was just me. The first guy calls me and said, "Hey, I just smoked a big one." I'm like, "Awesome." Like, you know, don't get out of your stand. Guys are still hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Not even 15 minutes, another guy calls me. "Hey, man, just smoke one." I'm like, "All right, I'm on my way." Then on my way to the property, the third guy calls me. It's not even 3 o'clock yet. He smoked one.
Jeez.
So that was, that makes it worthwhile.
Oh, yeah.
That makes it worthwhile.
So how long was it before you actually got guides and stopped doing everything
my
yourself?
My second year.
Second year?
My second year, I had a retired state trooper from Pennsylvania, Brian, and then I had Craig Slomers, who has that outfitter now in western Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Yeah, had both of them.
Okay.
Brian didn't make it all season. He still had a family back in Pennsylvania. He kind of got homesick. Great guy.
Yeah.
So then it was just me and Craig.
Okay.
And we did good, you know. Yeah. And each year I keep getting another one. Getting guides is one of those things. They do it for a year, and then they move on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very fortunate and very lucky right now. Mason and Steve, they want to do it for a few years, mm-hmm. and that's really what you need.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, they know how I am. I know how they are. They know the properties, you know.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's huge.
Did you primarily want to keep, like, PA guides? Because I just noticed that, that it's a bunch of PA guys. I don't know how.
I recruit the motherland. Yeah. I mean, it seems like Harrisburg. I mean, I have a bunch of connections in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, Steve's different. He was out here in 2020. Mm-hmm. He hunted here.
Yep.
And he actually called me out of the blue. He's like, hey, you still looking for a guide? And I'm like, yeah.
Right.
He's like, well, I'm interested. I'm like, all right, cool. Like Mason said on the last podcast, you know, he's like, you know, we talked at Harrisburg. I truly, to this day, don't remember that. You talk to so many people at Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk to thousands of people for those 10 days. So when he called me, he said, hey, yeah, we talked to Harrisburg. So I guess we did. I'm like, all right, I met you before, you know. He got out here. I had no idea who he was. But, yeah.
I never met you a day in my life.
Yeah, that's how it kind of felt. But, no, Mason's been really good. Steve's been great.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't ask for better. So
I think the thing I like most about the lodge and this whole outfitter in general, it feels like I'm at hunting camp. Like that's the main thing, is like I feel like I'm at my hunting camp. Like we're it's literally like we know each other for forever and we're just at hunting camp. Like that's the best part about it.
You know, this week especially, it's a light week. What is mm-hmm. there, five of you guys, six of you guys?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, during the rut when we have 12 to 14 guys here, you know, we're lucky 80% of our guys are repeats. That's huge. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, we know them. We're becoming at least I'm family with these guys. You know, Steve and Mason met them for the first time this year.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the whole thing. Like, you know, my dad's been going to Maine for 28 years. Same people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're family.
Yeah.
That's your business. That's what you want your clientele is family. But, yeah, I mean, we're all from Pennsylvania. We've all have hunting cabins, you know what I mean? Like, we're talking about playing cards and stuff and drinking beer and just hanging out, telling stories. I mean, that's what it's about.
Yeah. That's the best part about it, is sharing the stories and hearing just random shit, like Jeff's stories, and especially Jeff's stories.
Good stories.
Yeah.
Well, interesting things. That was, like, second gun this year. Like, we had guys from Indiana, Minnesota, Florida, New York,
mm-hmm.
and Alabama.
Yeah.
So that's five different states. That's five different kinds of hunting. That's five different kinds of culture almost.
Yeah.
You put them all together, the stories, everybody, you know, guys from Florida are talking about killing Osceolas down there, and the Alabama guys are talking about their thing, and the New York guys are talking about hunting refuges, shooting thousands of ducks a year, you know. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, camaraderie is a big part of this.
Yes. And that needs to be shared more. Like, I like going out in the woods by myself. I like hunting by myself, but I want to come home to or come back to a cabin that is the camaraderie stuff. Like, that's the best part to me. Like, I asked my wife tonight when I was FaceTiming, I was like, hey, can we move down to Illinois?
She wouldn't like it.
No. Scott, no, she said, no, we're not moving to Illinois.
The guys that come here, are any of those guys outfitters?
Actually, a guy we're going to have guide next year. We met at Harrisburg. We had a booth right next to each other. He just retired. He had a hunting lodge in Maine for 25 years. He came down this year and first gun hunted with us. With a couple of his old clients from Maine. They booked a hunt with me. They didn't know I knew Glenn. And they're like, hey, Glenn, we're going to Illinois. He's like, where are you going? And they're like, oh, B&D Alfred. He's like, oh, that's my buddy Scott. They're like, how the hell do you know him?
Yeah.
Like, oh, our booth's next to each other at Harrisburg. So Glenn was an outfitter. Yeah, Glenn's the only one we got that's an outfitter. Yeah.
Of your regular guys that come, do you ever go to their places to hunt?
Hopefully when I'm retired. You know, everybody invites me. You know, come up hunting in New York, come up hunting in Alabama or Tennessee mm-hmm. or Kentucky and Wisconsin and Minnesota. You know, our busy time is October to December. You know, and that's everybody else's good hunting time. And, you know, now we do have an offer this year for an Osceola down in Florida. So I might take that one up. That might be the first one I actually go on. So, yeah, you know, you build a lot of connections. You meet a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You always get those invites.
I know in Pike Calhoun County, there's a lot of other outfitters. Like, is there competition? Like, obviously there's competition, but like, is there any bad blood between outfitters?
I wouldn't call it bad blood.
Okay.
I have a couple buddies that aren't the owners, but guide there.
Yeah.
They let me know what's going on, deer movement, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll do the same for them. But it's very interesting. You walk into a bar, especially up north, up towards Eldara and New Canton, the northern side of Pike County, there's a bar called the Copperhead. You know, you walk in there on a weekday for lunch.
Yeah.
There's about 12 outfitters. And we all know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has a sticker or a sign on the side of their truck. They won't say a word to you. You know, their okay. shit doesn't stink.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, I like pie.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's apple or pumpkin, whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's enough pieces for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you don't got to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's guys that have been in business 30 years, and there's guys like me who are going into their fifth year. At one point, y'all started.
Mm-hmm.
Same part, you know. Yep. But, yeah, I wouldn't say bad blood. It's just everybody kind of sticks to themselves. Okay. And that's kind of like the community around here. It takes a while to get in, and you just kind of do your own thing,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
They don't like outsiders here.
Yeah.
At all.
We kind of got that from the drive down here when they were staring at Patrick's car.
If you own a truck, they're going to wave to you. They just assume you're a farmer.
Yeah. So, yeah, if we worry about my Dodge down.
Yeah, no Volkswagens. First one I've ever seen in 5 years.
So the one thing that I've been thinking about since coming down here is, do you see less like younger generations, like the four of us, come down here, like because of the whole public land, you know, thing with the hunting public and all that kind of stuff?
I don't think it's about public land.
Okay.
I think for a lot of guys, and you see it at Harrisburg.
Yeah.
This is actually a good thing to bring up. So at Harrisburg, you sit there. And you got three types of guys. You got guys that walk around and they have a list. They know they're going to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they want to go. Let's put it that way. They're going to go talk to every Illinois outfitter there is. They're going to ask you a million questions, which is a big investment.
Yep.
You know? So that'll be day one. Day three, they come back. They're going to ask you more questions. And then by the end of the week, they probably aren't going to come back to your booth, but they're going to call you. And that's right. when they'll book.
Yeah.
Those are your serious guys. You get number two, the other guys that are these guys that walk around and be like, hey, yeah, Pike County, Illinois, Calhoun County, Illinois, mm-hmm. or whatever in the Midwest, whatever outfitter you are. Look at this buck I have in my backyard in Pennsylvania. It's like, okay, man, that's great.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy
oh,
for you.
Oh, that's what I did when I came down here.
Yeah, I mean, I got, no, but,
your no, guy but seriously, number two.
Like, this guy's showing me 110-inch whitetail.
Right, yeah.
But he's going to have a conversation with me for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be rude.
Right.
But, I mean, I grew up in Pennsylvania. I know what it's like. I get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you get the third guy, which I always feel bad about because I was him. I was in college. And I have little boys now that are 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you get these guys that are our age, 23 to 28. They have a little kid. They're pushing them in the stroller. And they're walking by looking at these whitetails and every outfitter. And they're dreaming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, yep. fuck, I don't have the money right now. The old lady's not going to let me go. You know,
yeah.
like, I work every day of my life, you know, mm-hmm. trying to get ahead. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
eventually it's going to happen for them.
Right.
Eventually it's going to happen. But I think the younger generation, you don't see as much because it's the money.
Yeah.
You know, guys come down here, public land in Illinois, they don't advertise it. You got to know where to go.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, you come down. I mean, your tag's $400.
Mm-hmm.
Your license, $50. So right there is $450. Let's say you're coming from Pennsylvania. You're going to probably fill your truck up two or three times. Let's say $200 on gas. You got to pay for a hotel. Well, hotel prices go up, you know, more because it's deer season. You know, it's still a lot of money mm-hmm. regardless.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of younger guys out of state come down
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Unless they're on daddy's dime or something.
Right.
You know?
No, it's, I mean, that's Patrick and I talked about that. Like, it's, you know, it is an expensive thing to come down here and do all that kind of stuff, just tags alone. But I mean, because you look at other states like around PA, I mean, Maryland, it's, I didn't really look at it too much, but like a PA non-resident tag is $101 for a non-resident tag. And you get a buck tag, you get a turkey tag, you get, you know,
all that kind of stuff. Like it's different states is just different prices, obviously, you know, but also they probably, the price is a little more for a tag down here in Illinois because there's a higher quality of deer. I don't know if that's why or not.
You know, when you look at like Pleasant Hill, like the graduating high school class, there's 12 kids a year. You know, unless you're a farmer, a nurse, or a teacher, there's no work here.
Yeah.
So there's 82 outfitters in Pike County, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge revenue for those towns.
Yeah.
The school gets a piece. The county gets a piece. The towns get a piece. Gas stations, restaurants, everything.
Yeah.
Everybody's making money off this. Everybody.
Okay.
You know, and that's like you look at land prices to lease. Like some of these farms are going 50. We know a farm on 6 Mile. Two guys from Alabama, 300 some acres, right? It's a great farm, don't get me wrong. I mean, Booner after Booner. Mm-hmm. They're paying like $120 an acre, two guys. They come down and hunt the rut and first gun. That's it.
Wow.
That's all they do.
Wow. That's money, I mean, right there.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Per acre.
That's a lot.
You know, because nobody else could afford to do it.
Right, exactly. You know?
You're talking over $30,000.
Wow. Do you see a lot of farmers do that, that just lease it out just for that money right there?
Not that anymore. Yeah. I mean, hear stories back in the day. Like, I call this the big leagues. I relate it to baseball. I mean, but you're averaging $35 to $50 an acre,
Okay.
You know. And that, you know, they're going to charge you the same amount if it's 500 acres of corn.
Yeah.
Like, that's a going rate. Because if you don't pay it, somebody else is.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many emails and how many calls I get every year. Hey, do you have any farms available? You know, wow. come down, knock on doors, see how far they get you.
Yeah.
You know? And then you get these booking agencies online.
Yep.
And then it's funny because you read them. It's like, oh, yeah, 500-acre farm in Pike County, Illinois. $20,000. You know, and then they tell you you can only have 2 to 3 hunters. You can't do that.
No, you can't.
But guys do it.
Yeah. Wow. You know? That's astronomical right there to do that on that farm. So with those pieces, there's three guys. How long does it take to scout a property? Like, let's just say the 1,400 acre one that Tim and I are hunting. How long does it take to scout that whole property and put up stands and cameras and all that kind of stuff?
Like, you know, it's different because it's all haulers and mm-hmm. timber, and it's not like it's flat and it's fields and, you know, you're looking at the transition areas. I mean, you just walk and you walk and you walk and...
Yeah.
You know, I got the original map from the old outfitter, and that helped a lot. It showed where he had all of his stands through the years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're two different people.
Right.
He didn't push into the timber. He only hunted the trails.
Oh, okay.
I like hunting timber.
Yeah.
You know, we know that's good and we know that's bad. We know hunting the trails is good and is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, a farm like that, and then you walk in the summer, it looks different than it does in the fall, and then it looks different in the winter. The deer change. Everything changes. So, I mean, realistically, I think you're always scouting.
Yeah.
You know, but your stands, you want to get them up at least a month and a half prior. Is that always the case? No. Because you might come across a new area you want to get a stand in or, you know. Just like Mr. Jeff over there. You know, he talks about that buck coming down that fence line, and it was a new blind.
Yeah.
This year we built these platforms for our ground blinds. They're like 2 feet off the ground, 6x6. Our guys love them because we have a lot of guys confined to ground blinds. We listen to them. They wanted to be off the ground a little bit. That's great. You know, you can't just throw one of them platforms up real quick, but you can put a ground blind in the ground real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You watch the hunting channel, they do it all the time. Did that make or break him? I don't know. But it was something new.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, our ground blinds, the ones that are already out, they've been out for 2 months, 3 months prior before season.
Okay.
So the deer are used to them.
Yeah.
You know, is that always the case? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully that buck makes that loop again and he takes a little munch on those beans. But late season, I mean, anything could happen. You got to change things up.
Yeah.
You know?
So what would be your biggest advice to the five of us sitting right here in this room? 2 days left.
Ooh, keep hunting hard. Yeah. I mean, putting all day sits in. You're seeing deer different times of the day. Mm-hmm. I think everybody across the board has seen deer, whether it's morning, evening, mid-afternoon, this time of year, there's really no reason to anything. I mean, you saw that big one, mm-hmm. munch on acorns, 120 yards behind you, going up on top of a hauler.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. every time we've seen him this year, he was on the other side of the property. He wasn't doing what he did today.
Right.
You know, he's been chasing. He's been fucking hard. You know, he's tired.
Yeah.
You know, and now with this cold, they want to eat.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so that's why we move more towards food sources. Yeah, we're hunting beans right now, picked beans. You know, Jeff's in an area where there's a little bit of standing beans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just being in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, but all you can do is hunt hard. The more time you spend in the timber, the better your chances are.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, if you're here on the couch, like, you're not going to kill one.
Yeah.
You know, we could think about it. We could talk about it. You know, we got guys that are here for the rut.
Yeah.
Here for the rut. They come in and they're part of the breakfast club.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
They're in at 9 o'clock.
I couldn't do that during the rut. I couldn't.
You can do it.
No.
But, I mean, you know, it's a client's hunt. If that's what mm-hmm. they want to do, I used to get so upset about that.
Yeah.
Be like, you know, like, you're not out there. Yeah. Like, you're telling me you're not seeing anything. You've only been in the woods for 2 hours this morning, number one.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, now you're in for breakfast. You don't want to go back out till 2, and it's like, mm-hmm. man, this is upsetting.
Yeah.
I don't get upset anymore. It's those guys' hunts. If that's what they want to do, that's what we'll do.
Yep.
But, I mean, the more time you spend out there, the better your chances are. I mean, that's just, you want to play numbers, that's numbers.
Yeah.
You know? But you guys are hunting hard. I mean, that's all we could do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you guys are sticking it out through, you know, hurricane winds and freezing temperatures and looking at squirrels all day. And, I mean, it's tough. I get it. It's mental.
I mean,
it's just mental. Started
naming the squirrels.
Yeah.
Patrick thinks he's going to lose his feet because they're going to freeze off.
Yeah, but just like he said the other day, he's mm-hmm. like, I'm sitting there, like, it'd be so easy to come in and change my boots. Anybody mm-hmm. else would have done that. He said, I'm not a fucking pussy. Yeah. I'm staying. You know, that's what it's it true. Takes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
There's been something kind of therapeutic. Like, I wouldn't want to do this, like, every day for, like months out of the year. But there's something about it that it's like you have to – like to overcome that, and it's like, yeah, man, like even if I don't get anything, like I've pushed myself like to be better both in the woods and just like mentally, and I don't know, there's just something that in of itself is like rewarding about that, just like just being out there in the woods.
Yeah, and like we're talking about just being out there, like it could happen anytime. Jeff, what time did you see that buck the other day?
It was late afternoon.
Like what time though?
A little after three. Yeah.
So, I guarantee you, if you came in for breakfast, and we leave the lodge at 2, so let's say we get you back in that blind, it's 2:45. You walk out through that field, you know, you're making a little bit of noise getting in that blind, I bet you don't see that deer.
Probably not.
And that's the difference.
But if I did, then I'd probably expect to have that same experience all the time, and that's not reality.
Yeah, that's not realistic.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a big thing when guys come out to the Midwest. They think there's 140 behind every tree. They think they're going to sit here and see a 140, 150 every sit. It's not realistic. It's mm-hmm. hunting. It's fair chase hunting.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I wish it was like that.
Too much television.
Oh, yeah.
Too much.
They're watching these guys on the Outdoor Channel. They're going to a place, a farm that hasn't been hunted in 4 years. Yeah. That deer hasn't smelled or seen a person in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we get a couple guys every year that ask us that on the Outdoor Channel or the Pursuit Channel. They want to come out here. And I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether you're Sean Kelly from New York or you're Tyler White from Pennsylvania, everybody has the same chance.
Yep.
Doesn't matter who you are. You know, we're going to do our best to put you on deer to kill a good one.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't been in the business 30 years where I'm just content with you seeing a booner at 300 yards.
Yeah.
You know, we want it dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, if a buck walks by me, it's probably going to be a big one. But yet, you know, you just wait for that moment. It's not every single day, you know, and it might not be even be a big one that walks by you. It might be a button buck. It might be a spike. It might be a three-pointer, might whatever. But, like, sometimes you get lucky enough where it works out and you get to see one of those Illinois Giants, you know. And I think I was lucky enough today to see one. So, I mean, right there, I consider that worth the price of admission just to be able to see from 120 yards away that buck. Like, would I love to see him even closer? Absolutely.
But you also put in, like, you put in the work to see that buck. Like, think about, like, the past 2 days, right? And, like, the amount of time that you've sat. Mm. And then, like, the moves that you made and moving your setup and, like, all of that. Like, that's still work. It's not like it just rolled up and it's like, oh, yeah, here you go. Here's your Boone and Crockett buck that you can see. Do you see him out there? Okay, cool.
I mean, Mason is the one, like, I just set up the saddle. Mason's the one that, like, is like, hey, go set up back here. And then Tim, I was like, hey, Tim, do you mind taking that spot? He's like, sure, go ahead. So, I mean, it wasn't just, all I did was literally put up a fucking saddle.
Oh, right. the work, like, we pay the price of admission. When you're getting an experience like this, you pay the price of admission. Because we're coming down for the and getting the expertise of the outfit. Mm-hmm. And then we get the privilege of going out and sitting and being able to experience like just the cold and the wind, and also being able to see the big buck and all the does running up and down the field. And yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I don't know either. I really do.
But yeah, Cody, if you think about it, you didn't see a deer the first 2 days you sat in that mm-hmm. saddle. Plenty of sign in there. I mean, mm-hmm. trails were mud and all that.
Yep.
All we really did, we moved at most 400 yards as a crow flies.
Yeah.
Just up over one bluff, and you saw that buck.
Mm-hmm.
And like what Scott was saying, that's the first time we had that buck in there all mm-hmm. year long, besides that one trail cam picture we have of him. He lived, what, say, half a mile, three-quarters of a mile away from there all year?
Yeah, and the only reason why you were there today is because we had a picture of a buck yesterday evening. Yeah. At 150-incher at 420, between 420 and 450, just munching on beans.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, just like, I don't care what time of year it is, you get a good camera picture, you're going.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, especially with the cold, you know, you're already trying to hunt the food sources, but, you know, now it makes it even better. Hey, this buck was out there for 25 minutes before it got dark.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, also, like, if I didn't even turn around, just catch a glimpse of his leg moving, he never would have been seen. Like, it's like, just a random coincidence that I turn around because squirrels are going fucking nuts. It's like, it's so random sometimes.
Yeah, and that makes you think about how many you don't see.
Yeah. It's like after I feel like that every time. Like after I see one deer, then I start looking around and I can actually see movement of other deer. Will anyone else have anything to add?
Time to kill some deer tomorrow.
All right. Bedtime. Wise words from Ethan.
It's bedtime now.
Yeah.
We're tired.
All right. Stay tuned for Day 4 update.